School CEO Conversations is an Aptigee Media production. We like to have insightful conversations with education's most inspiring and thoughtful leaders. In this episode, Leading with a Promise, we talk with Dr. Susan Enfield, Superintendent of Highline Public Schools in Washington. Here are our hosts, Michael and Joy.
Hey, Susan, we're so excited to have you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So just to hop right in, we wanted to know just a little bit more about the basics of the Highline Promise. Where did you even get the idea?
Sure. So I began my career in education as a high school English journalism and ELL teacher. And as a teacher and then as an administrator, I sort of lived by the mantra that we needed to know our students by name and need. And when I arrived in Highline in 2012, many of the leaders in the system were reading a book by a woman named Yvette Jackson called The Pedagogy of Confidence. And it's a wonderful book, and she's a wonderful scholar. The premise, in a nutshell, is what if we treated every child as gifted rather than approaching our children from a deficit perspective? What if we approached them from an asset perspective? So in one of my very, very first meetings with a group of educators and leaders here in Highline, I said, well, really, what we should be about is knowing every student by name, strength, and need. Because that strength piece is so critically important. And that was 2012, and name, strength, and need really resonated with people. It became sort of the heart of our new strategic plan. And over the years, I think has really become the DNA of our system and guides every decision we make and is, I think, at its core, our commitment to equity.
I know one of the most controversial things to come out of the Highline Promise was your team's commitment to reduce out-of-school suspensions. So how did that even come up?
Sure. So again, back in 2012, when I first arrived, our out-of-school suspension and expulsion numbers were incredibly high. It was mostly our African-American and Latino students and Native students that were being excluded from school. And the number one reason for these out-of-school suspensions and expulsions was defiance. And as a high school teacher, I really didn't believe in suspensions. Now, I want to be clear, there are legitimate reasons when you have to put a child out of school for safety reasons. And for example, there's state law that if a student brings a gun to school, mandatory suspension expulsion, that's out of our hands. But defiance is a different story. Defiance is the adults not seizing on a teachable moment and helping a student learn from their mistakes and their bad behavior. And as teenagers, children, they're going to make mistakes and exhibit bad behavior. And I believe it's incumbent upon the adults for us to help them learn from that. So I challenged everyone and said, what if we really worked to eliminate out-of-school suspensions except when it was critical for staff and student safety? And the original group of community members and staff that came together to develop our strategic plan made that one of our original strategic plan goals back in the 2012-13 school year. And, you know, and it really took off. And so we put in some measures to have some in-school alternative to help students that they wouldn't be put out of school. And over the course of the years, we've seen successes and we've also made mistakes and learned a lot of lessons. But tackling the issue of discipline and fundamentally flipping discipline as rather than a punitive punishment scenario, reframing it as a building relationships and respect scenario. Not by any means letting students off the hook and not having consequences for behavior, but making sure that those consequences do not lead to a lost diploma.
So you started making these pretty significant changes almost immediately when you started out your superintendency. Mm-hmm. So did you receive a lot of positive feedback for really hitting the ground running, or did you get any pushback?
Yes, I was showered in hearts and flowers and puppy kisses every single day. People thought it was the best thing ever. No, I think as with any systemic change and as with any meaningful change, it is hard work. And there was a tremendous amount of pushback. And I think that when I reflect on the lessons learned from those early years, one of the things that I underestimated as a leader was it wasn't just, you know, sort of technical practice changes that we were asking of people. We were really initiating a culture shift. We were fundamentally asking our teachers and staff to change how they interacted with students. And that's huge, right? Mm-hmm. And I did not really think that through probably and acknowledged it up front as I should have. And so, yes, it was incredibly hard and it was met with resistance by some people and it was absolutely the right thing to do. So if I had to go back in time, would I do it again? Absolutely. Would I be, I hope, smarter and more thoughtful in the implementation? Of course. You know, we all are. Hindsight is 20/20. Foresight is nil. So if I could go back and do it again, we would do some things differently, but we would still do it. And I think that it's a good reminder for us as leaders that if you wait until every condition is perfectly in place to act, you will never take action. Mm-hmm. At some point, you've just got to dive in and say, you know what? I mean, I liken it to, this is a bit of a stark image, but I felt that our suspension rates equated to us hemorrhaging kids. And when someone is hemorrhaging, you take immediate action to stop that from happening, right? And that's what we did. We took some immediate action. Then you've got to figure out what is the long-term diagnosis and treatment for the problem. And that's where the really good lasting solutions take place. And as I said, we've made gains and we've backslid at times. You know, this is not work that you can say one and done. It's work that takes constant attention and reflection, but fundamentally at its core, discipline is about relationships. Mm-hmm. And it's creating not just the expectation, but the conditions, the supports, the space for staff to build those relationships with students and with families as well.
So can you dig into that a little bit? I think the idea that discipline is about relationships is, it's not so intuitive, or at least it's not so intuitive to me. So what does that mean?
Well, so for example, I was a high school teacher for 7 years, and in 7 years, I never once suspended a student. Now, I had plenty of before, after school, and lunchtime conversations with students. And one day I did walk one student whose name I remember, but I won't say it on a public broadcast because I don't want to embarrass him. I'm sure he's a wildly successful, well-adjusted adult now. But I did, you know, walk him down to the assistant principal's office personally in the middle of class and say, I need you to have a conversation because I've hit my limit. But I did not say, don't come back tomorrow. Right? I said, I've done everything I can. Your behavior is unacceptable. We're not communicating. We're going to take a timeout from each other just for a little while today. And then we're going to come back tomorrow and regroup. And so my feeling was as a teacher was that when you behave badly or make a mistake in my class, you don't, you're the ultimate consequence of that is that you have to deal with me. I'm not going to let you off the hook and send the message that I'm throwing you away or that you are not worth my time and my respect. And when you take the time to, you know, to talk to a student, you know, this is what I learned. So often we punish the behavior without seeking the root cause of it in the first place. So when a student is acting out, how often do we say, you know, what's going on? And in fact, to bring that point home, so part of this was born from my experience as a high school teacher, but my first or second year in Highline, when we embarked on this work to shift discipline and to focus on teacher and staff-student relationships, I brought a middle schooler and a high schooler in to meet with our entire leadership team, central office and building principals. And the students had been suspended multiple times. They were both young men of color. And they told their stories. And then staff leaders in the audience started asking them questions. And I sat and I watched and I listened. And I waited for someone to ask the one question, in my mind, the only question that really mattered. And that was, and nobody did, so ultimately I did. And I said, at any point during this time, during which you were being suspended, did anyone ask you what's going on? What's wrong? What do you need? And no one ever did. And for one of them, his dad had just left, you know, and so he was dealing with the loss of his father and a change in his home life. You know, another one was dealing with substance abuse issues. So when a student's acting out, it's often a cry for help, but it's a symptom of a much larger issue. So if you have a relationship with a student and they trust you enough to share that with you, you can actually get them the help and the intervention that they need. And so now it becomes less about the actual incidents, the behavior, the discipline. It becomes about helping that young person get what they need so that they can, you know, grow and learn and flourish, not be penalized and potentially ostracized. from their school community.
I did want to go back, though, to the pushback that you mentioned, because I understand their pushback, right?
Mm-hmm.
That suspension, it's kind of a bit of power that you have over that student that you know you can pull out at any moment if you quote-unquote need to, right?
Yeah.
So I did want to know, how do you work with your teachers and how do you work with your team to get them to have that mindset shift that, one, this isn't my administration not supporting me and not having my back, but then also making sure that you're developing a culture and an attitude that says, okay, these are opportunities that are teachable moments, not necessarily punishable moments.
Yeah, so that's the crux of the issue. So first of all, you know, we learned a lot of lessons during this. First of all, the fine print matters, because the goal in our strategic plan was to eliminate out-of-school suspensions and expulsions. Mm-hmm. And then underneath it, you know, in smaller print said, except when critical for staff and student safety. And that was always it. But people who opposed this conveniently left off the fine print and said, you're eliminating out-of-school suspensions. It's anarchy. You're making it impossible. You're telling teachers they can't suspend. Nobody ever said that. Nobody ever said that. As I was always clear, there will sadly always be legitimate reasons to remove a student from school, but that is the last resort. There should be other mechanisms in place and a day-to-day focus on relationship building between students and staff that will mitigate a lot of that from happening in the first place. So yes, you are right that to some people, it felt like the district was saying you can't suspend, and that was never what we were saying. But what we wanted to say was, can you take a step back and think about, is there a better way to do this? How do we prevent this student from losing 5, 10, even more days of instruction? And by the way, last time I checked, when you send a student home for a week or two as punishment, they're not doing some deep reflection on where they went wrong and figuring out how they can grow into a better human being from this experience, right? We won't get into the list of things they could possibly be doing left to their own devices for 2 weeks. But one of the things that I used to say was, you know, I have moments where I'd like to get suspended for a week or two. I got some shows I can catch up on. I can use a little couch time with the cat, right? I mean, and I'm not trying to make light of the seriousness of this. But I will say that it is critically important that you constantly communicate the intent of what you're doing and put supports in place for this to work in schools. So, for example, we put staff in the building to help with the alternative or in-school suspension. We provided de-escalation training for teachers and staff. So, you know, it wasn't that we just sort of threw people into it and said, figure it out. We really did try to provide resources. Now, I'm sure plenty of staff would say the resources weren't enough. That's very fair. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, and I'll go back to what I said earlier, you have to start somewhere. And I will say that one of the other things that we learned, because I'm sure that you've followed, and I'd say, you know, in the last 5 years or so, it's hard to find any district that isn't sort of taking on this issue of eliminating out-of-school suspensions. And I think you hear of districts that are saying, we're putting a moratorium on elementary suspensions. You can't. And I just think that it's a lie. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. As I said, there are legal reasons for which you have to remove a student from school. And yes, sometimes that can be a second grader. I mean, that's the sad and gut-wrenching reality. But there are legitimate reasons. Now, you know, they're few and far between, but they're real. And so, you know, when we took this on, we were, I think, one of the first districts to take this on without having any kind of a lawsuit or OCR expectation on us. We did it because our data compelled us to do it. Mm-hmm. And so we were figuring it out as we went. And I think one of the things that we learned was that you need to be really clear and you need to be really honest. And you need to also be relentless in keeping your focus on why this is the right thing to do for young people.
You talked kind of about a culture shift that came from the knowing every student by name, strength, and need.
Mm-hmm.
How long did that shift take, and what did you see? Like, what was the change?
Well, I would say it's an ongoing shift,
yeah.
Right? But what's interesting is our Highline Promise and our strategic plan goals over time really became critical recruitment tools for us. That promise and a strategic plan with goals like eliminating out-of-school suspension, except when critical for staff and student safety, that appeals to, resonates with a certain kind of equity-driven educator, right? So people actively choose to be in Highline because they read that, they hear that, and they think to themselves, yes, that's what I believe, that's what I want to do. Now, the flip side of that coin is there are folks for whom this is not the work that they want to do.
Yeah.
I'm very clear. This is not work for the faint of heart. We have the most extraordinary staff of professionals in Highline that show up every day and believe in this promise. And yes, some have left our system because, you know what? This isn't for everyone. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's not an indictment on who you are as a person or even a professional if this system and who we are doesn't align with your skill set and who you are and what you believe. That's okay. All of us as individuals have to work in an organization where we feel our values or the organization's values align with ours. That fits critically important. And I believe that, and this is not an uncontroversial thing to say as a superintendent, but just because you teach, just because you lead, doesn't mean you can do that in Highline. You know, we're very clear on what our children and families deserve. And we have invested a tremendous amount of time and energy into our human resources team and making sure that we are recruiting the right folks mm-hmm. who really want to be here for the right reasons. And the right reasons are our kids. And, you know, we are a richly diverse school system, and we believe that every one of our children is brilliant, beautiful, and brimming with promise and deserving of being known by name, strength, and need. And like many public education systems across this country, our students come to us with a wide range of challenging circumstances. But we refuse to let that be a barrier to their success. And that's what makes, I think, the people in Highline so incredible, is that we don't let those challenging conditions become excuses mm-hmm. for why our students can't. We believe our students can. And this is hard work. This is really, really hard work. When I welcome our new staff each year, you know, I say, on the good days, nothing will lift your soul higher and make you feel better than this. And on the hard days, nothing will crush your soul faster. And that's just the reality of this work. And so I think that we've just gotten really clear on who we are and what we stand for. And that has brought the right people into the system. I think it has also strengthened and emboldened those who were in the system who were hungry for this kind of clarity and boldness. And it has prompted some to say, this isn't the place for me. And that's okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that makes total sense. I mean, from an organizational perspective, I mean, you have this very lofty goal. If you all individually aren't all together pulling in that same direction, I mean, the districts, they're no way going to accomplish that goal.
Well, exactly. And I actually, you know, and I said this before, and I have this, you know, theory that one of the things that we've done wrong in public ed is we treat teaching and we treat districts as this sort of monolith, right? Just because I'm a teacher, I can teach equally well anywhere, and that every district is essentially the same. And that's just not so. I think that we, as school districts, owe it to ourselves and especially to our staff to be very clear in who we are and what sets us apart and what it means to teach in Highline versus Seattle or Topeka mm-hmm. or, you know, New York or wherever. Now, are there some similarities and consistencies? Of course there are. But I think that we also need to be really clear on what distinguishes us and how that distinction very much shapes what the work looks like in the district. And I think that we've been clearer about that over the years.
Oh, absolutely, because you talked about that distinction, you know, what's making you unique. I mean, your students are unique, and ultimately, like you talked about, much of this work is building those relationships with those individual students. So if your mm-hmm. group of students are unique, it would make sense that your district is going to be unique and is going to have really its own unique identity.
Exactly, exactly. And ultimately, I think that our promise is the biggest, most prominent example of that.
Oh, definitely. So you have a lot to be proud of in your career at Highline. And one question that we ask every superintendent on the podcast is, what is your proudest moment as superintendent?
Oh gosh, there's a lot. Well, I'll give you one lighthearted one and one more really profound one that I think speaks to Highline. So the lighthearted one is from Halloween last year, and we get a pretty healthy number of trick-or-treaters in our neighborhood. And so, and I'm going to be real honest, I'm not a big Halloween person, never have been. So I don't dress up, but, you know, I do stand at the door for 4 hours and hand out candy. And so I was wearing, you know, I don't know, sweatpants and a sweatshirt. And I think last year I made a big effort and had like a headband with cat ears on it. So, you know, that was like the extent of my costuming. But a group of students came to the door, and one of them, Grace, she's a student at one of our elementary schools whom I've known for several years now, since it's my ninth year as superintendent. I get to know kids over the years. And Grace was one of the trick-or-treaters. And I said, Grace, it's you. How are you? And she gets this really confused look on her face. And she looks at me like, who are you? And I said, Grace, it's Dr. Enfield. It's Susan. And her eyes got really big, and she ran up and she hugged me. And she said, oh my gosh, I didn't recognize you. And I said, I know, because I didn't have my superintendent costume on. I'm dressed like a normal person. And she starts laughing and da-da-da-da-da. Oh. So, and then the other one that is a more serious, but I think equally beautiful, and really, I think, sums up the real beauty that is Highline, is not at this year's graduation, because that looks different, but at our 2019 graduation at Tyee High School. I was sitting there, and Tyee is our most beautifully diverse high school in the district. All of our schools are richly diverse, but Tyee is really exceptional. And there were three student speakers, and the first two students gave their speeches in English and in Spanish, because they were both first generation graduates, and they wanted their families who were in the audience to understand, be able to hear in their words, their speech as well. And I just thought that was so beautiful and such a wonderful reminder of why, for many students and families, graduation is a really big deal, right? These kids are the first in their families, in many cases, to reach this milestone, and it's significant. And the third student that got up was Moana. And Moana gets up with her fabulous flowing hair, and she is just all about it. And she gets up and just tells her story with such confidence and pride. And her story is that she was assigned male and knew it from a pretty early age. But when she got to high school, decided that she really wanted to transition, and she wanted to be public about it. And so she went to some of her teachers and staff at Tyee and said, this is what I want to do. And the staff communicated, and they supported her very boldly and appropriately, as did the students. And I just sat there, you know, watching this young woman who was so confident in who she was and in her own skin, but more importantly, in that school community that embraced her and didn't judge her and loved her for who she is. I thought, that's the best of who we are in Highline Public Schools. That is why this is such an incredibly special place, and why I'd rather not be leading through a global pandemic, but if I do have to lead through a global pandemic, Highline's the place I want to do it. It made me very, very proud and very grateful to be in a community that values the dignity of every person. And it gets back to that Highline promise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tyee made sure that Moana was known by name, strength, and need, and she felt that.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. That's beautiful.
It was really powerful. Yeah. Well, that's great. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. We're so happy
to
have
you. You're
so
welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this School CEO Conversation. You can follow Dr. Enfield on Twitter at SUPTEnfield and learn more about the Highline Promise in the show notes. Subscribe to School CEO at schoolceo.com for more advice, stories, and strategies for leading your schools. School CEO is brought to you by Aptigy. This episode is sponsored by Frontlines of Justice. Frontlines of Justice is a digital platform crafted to utilize the power of film to address social, racial, and educational issues in America through innovative technology, premium content, and influential educators. It's like nothing you've ever seen, offering content you actually want about issues you actually care about. In these times of social unrest, racial injustice, and remote learning,
Front Lines of Justice is the solution that we need. E-learning that is changing hearts and minds from the front lines. Join the front lines at frontlinesofjustice.com.